Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Hi guys, welcome to Onceable episode 66. We will be talking about Once Upon a Time episode 19, Sympathy for the Devil. I'm Brittany, and tonight I'm joined by Laura, Karen, and Kristen. Say hi.
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 Jen is a little under the weather, but we'll hopefully have her back next week. And so this week we're going to be talking about Cruella and her backstory, her story in the present, everything that has to do with her, and a little bit of Emma, because we have to, for plot's sake. So first we're going to start off with thumbs up, thumbs down, and let's start with Laura.
For me, it was definitely a thumbs up episode. I really enjoyed it. I liked the pace. I thought it was an unpredictable storyline. It did not go where I thought it was going to go. I, in general, liked it.
Awesome. And Karen?
I'm going to go with thumbs up, too. I've been looking forward to the Cruella backstory for a little while now, and I wasn't disappointed. I like that they went in a different direction with her. It wasn't necessarily a born evil type of thing. It wasn't necessarily a made evil type of thing, more like mentally unstable. And I thought that was kind of an interesting twist. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Cool. And Kristen?
Definitely a thumbs up for me. I liked all the little twists and turns that this episode took, because again, it's nice to be surprised. And the actress that plays Cruella, like, it took me a second to realize that was actually her in the flashbacks. Like, at first I thought it was a younger person. I was like, holy cow, she's gorgeous. So yeah, that was impressive too.
I'm also going to go with a thumbs up. I like how dark they went with Cruella. Like, they did not push the brakes at all with her, and I like we're finally heading somewhere, or I think we're heading somewhere. You never know what could happen next week, but I think we're heading towards a conclusion, or at least the beginning of Emma's darkness, as we saw in her brooding stare at the end of this week's episode. So let's talk about favorite quotes. I feel like there was a lot to quote from this episode, more so than the rest of the season.
Yes.
And they were very quick. Like, if you weren't paying attention, you missed the best lines. So let's start with Laura. What was your favorite quote?
I really liked Regina's quote, which was, "You're acting like a petulant child. Your parents did a bad thing. They apologized. Now get over it." I really just like that, because I felt like that with Emma for the past couple of episodes. And I felt like Regina said what I personally was feeling. And I'm like, come on, you're like 30 years old. Grow the F up. That was sort of my take on it. I feel like she's acting like she's 16.
All right. And Karen?
Mine's actually a perfect segue from that, because my favorite line was in response to Regina, and it's when Emma says, "Forgive me if I don't take advice from the woman who held a grudge for half of her life because a 10-year-old spilled a secret." And although I completely agree with you, Laura, like, Emma's whole trajectory where she's just like, she cannot forgive her parents, is getting old really fast. But at the same time, I just love this little dig at Regina, because it's true. Regina kind of shouldn't be the one offering her this advice when she's built her entire life around destroying the Charmings because of what Snow did to her when she was a kid.
Very true. And Kristen?
Mine was Belle, but technically it was Regina through Belle, when she said to Rumpel, "Sometimes I worry. I worry I threw out the chipped teacup too soon." Now, the only reason that this is one of my favorite lines is because it was Regina using it to lure Rumpel in before she dropped the hammer. So I just
I was really worried when I saw this.
Oh my gosh. I was like in a tuck going, "No, no, Belle, no."
No. I have not joined the dark side. But I liked it because it was all just Regina, like, amping it up and amping it up so that he'd believe it, and then pow, she just smashed his dreams. So yeah, that I liked it for that reason.
And the smashed dreams, I just have to throw this in here, was when she was like, Will is such a better kisser than you are. And I was like, oh, man.
I love that. That was great.
And burn. Yeah.
Yeah, that was almost my favorite line. But I, of course, had to go with when Cruella was supposed to be keeping an eye on Henry and waiting for the hero brigade to show up. And she's playing Angry Birds on her phone. And she's just like, blasted birds, I'll show you what angry looks like. And she's just like madly like using her phone to play Angry Birds while Henry's cutting himself loose and running into the woods. So I loved her use of technology in this episode. But going to a time without technology, well, she has a radio, but let's talk about Cruella's childhood, as I've subtitled it, an F. Scott playground, because it's very Gatsby reminiscent. Mm. It's unbelievable. I loved every single little detail of this part. So to begin with, we see Cruella running away from home and Dalmatians are chasing after her because we find out that her mother is a very, very talented dog trainer. And she kind of takes a chapter out of every childhood storybook and locks Cruella away in the attic after her father's death, which you can kind of write off as just, okay, the mother's evil, Cruella's innocent, we need to see her get out of the tower. And that's kind of what happens. So what did you think of them choosing that type of start for her storyline?
I definitely thought I knew where the story was going because, like you said, I mean, I feel like nearly every princess-centric story starts with the mother, usually the evil stepmother, locking somebody in a tower or a room or, you know, hiding them away, and then they break free and they become the princess. And in this case, they really flip that on the head. And, you know, of course, that happens at the end of the episode, we find it out. But the fact that they started this off this way specifically, I think they knew exactly what they were doing when they did that. They knew we would come to a certain conclusion, and by the end of the episode, they flipped it so amazingly that it was just a really great surprise to her whole storyline.
One little note, when she locks her in the attic and she calls her Cruella, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, her name has been Cruella de Vil the entire time. Like, if she truly has a sympathetic story, her name should not be Cruella. So while I bought into the evil mother's locking her away, I also was thinking, but the poor girl's name is Cruella. Like, that can't be good. So later on when it flipped, I was like, okay, all right, I get it. All right.
You know what was interesting too? I agree with you. Like, I really love the setup. I totally hear what you're saying about the name. Where I think I got suckered into it was things like the mother not having things like the mother not allowing her to have a radio. I'm like, so even if you have a psychopath that you've locked up in the attic for the greater good of society, why not give her a radio? Like, there were moments where I think it was harder to see that the mother was not this crazy person. And I think the radio situation, like, realistically, what would she have done to her advantage by having a radio? I mean, if anything, maybe it would have kept her kind of busy and out of the mother's hair. She would complain less. So I definitely feel like I got kind of suckered with that. But I totally get the other things, like they were talking about, like why the flowers were destroyed and, you know, other things were explained away. But I felt like we definitely got set up a little bit.
Yeah. And I think it was an oddly timed thing to put in there because you could have shown that she was sneaking out in other ways, not so much to go out and get a radio. I mean, it does kind of give them an incentive to get her to go someplace where there's music playing and it's loud and instead of it being so quiet. So maybe she needs to drown out whatever her mind is telling her to do, as we know is not healthy, as we'll come to learn in a little bit. But speaking of getting out of the house, the author, aka Isaac, comes knocking and he wants to know all the dish on this woman who has gone through a couple of husbands and is notoriously like this renowned dog trainer. And I think he is looking for her to be using some sort of magic. What do you think of the author in his storyline here?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I totally felt like he was there as like an investigative journalist in a sense, you know, yeah, that he did think that it was magic. Or I was wondering if he was going to reveal that she was some other kind of fairy tale character that we knew well. And, you know how they're always like crossing stories. And I was wondering if we were going to like connect her to being like Cinderella's stepmother's sister or something like that. Like you just felt like there would be some sort of connection. But yeah, I mean, like right away when the author was there, I'm like, okay, this is a setup. He's not just happening through. Clearly, this is a thing.
Yeah. And oh, go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, and I was totally expecting her to have been using magic because the dogs are so well trained, that I thought there was going to be, like you were saying, Laura, I guess more of a twist or a backstory with the mother. But in a way, I'm kind of glad that there wasn't. But I also just have to throw out here that the like CGI mean Dalmatians wasn't really into that. I know we talk a lot about the CGI and stuff on this show, but
you mean you didn't like the mouth snarls that looked painted on?
No, and it's sad because I feel like, why couldn't they have just gotten the dogs to do that? I mean, every dog knows how to growl. You know, they've all been territorial or something. Like, you can train a dog to do that. So I don't know why they felt the need to make it a little, I don't know. It looked cartoony to me, which was kind of sad, but.
Yeah, and I think they did a great job with going off of what you guys are saying about the mother of setting her up so that we wouldn't believe anything that she said, because that comes back to bite us later when she goes to speak to the author, which we'll get to in a minute. But I think they're making her seem so hostile and unwilling to give information because they're distracting you from Cruella's story, which we find out a lot more of once the author, or Isaac, is able to get her out of her attic and out into the club, per se. I think the club is called Murray's, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was like a shout out to something.
I thought it was, I certainly didn't catch it,
but
I tried to look into it, and yeah. I just gave up last night because Mad Men was on, and I was trying to write my recap, and I'm like, this is something for another day.
I was gonna say Arthur Murray's like a famous ballroom dance instructor guy, so maybe it had something to do with that. Just throwing that out there, I have no idea.
It's very possible because I did not know that. But anyway, she gets to like this big band type of place and they're playing the hit of the century, which is Cruella de Vil from the animated feature. And so she's dancing, she gets the author to dance. And basically before the author left Cruella's house, the mother was like, oh, you need to stop worrying about documenting other people's lives and you should live your own life. So he kind of takes that to heart. And when he's with Cruella and they're dancing and they're having a great time, he finally decides to show off his quill, as I say here, which is not a euphemism. And it kind of reveals that this is a realm within another realm, within another realm, that he travels in between documenting people's stories. So the author is able to bounce from places like, I'm assuming, New York to this 1920s London-esque area to the Enchanted Forest. And so what did you guys think of that kind of hole in the plots of every other story we've known?
That mythology, the idea of like she couldn't come up with a year and the year wasn't important because it's a realm. I thought that was actually pretty cool. I don't know that we've actually touched on that, but that specific accent. Not making sense, but I don't think we've touched on that particular kind of, I don't know, touch before. I really liked it. It to me, it explained why you could be in all these different anachronistic places. I really kind of liked it.
For one reason or another, it made me think of Thor and the nine realms and them all lining up. And so I kept thinking, I was like, well, what other realms could we still visit? Like, I wonder if this is kind of a door opening so that there's a new world that they want to explore in the future.
Like Asgard.
Well, Asgard or like somewhere more Grecian, because we've had a lot of hints to the Greek gods, so I could see them opening that door at some point. Or it just made me wonder what other realms they're kind of maybe setting up here.
Yes, please.
Maybe we'll finally get Will's story. Because maybe he was able to run into Will somewhere in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this whole, like, them being in a bubble thing makes a lot of sense because if for some reason the story gets out or something, I feel like it would be easier to be contained inside that bubble rather than kind of going back to the whole, like, Asgard thing. I mean, now in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, everybody knows that the aliens exist. I don't feel like that would work very well for Once Upon a Time. So the fact that they're all sort of in their separate little bubbles, if the story gets out or something, it's not our world that's being affected, that story's traveling around. So I feel like this is sort of a safeguard, I guess, for the writers, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, not that it's ever coming up again, but it does sort of explain the entire Neverland sequence. Not Neverland, Alice's trip, the whole...
Yeah, that's sort of what I was saying.
Yeah, it totally explains, like, the Wonderland thing and how, you know, we were flipping between Victorian England and then you have Will, who's now in the present day. It totally explains all that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of when they were going through. I was like, oh, well, then that makes a lot more sense. I mean, we still have a couple of other little time travel, realm traveling things to explain when it comes to Corella. So she's not completely over with yet because she still needs to get to the Enchanted Forest and get to New York. We did see how she got to New York. We need to see how she got to the Enchanted Forest, I think. Unless I'm completely missing something and you guys can tell me if I am.
No, I can't remember seeing her to the Enchanted Forest either. Like, I can't recall it. So
I think there's still like a London to Enchanted Forest type of tunnel we need to solve. But anyway, we get the author gets her word that she's going to come and run off with him and they're going to stop writing other people's stories and kind of write their own. And did you guys buy Cruella actually liking him up until this point?
Yes. I absolutely did too. Because she looked so naive and so innocent with her big eyes. And I honestly thought, because we know Isaac, we know the type of person he is, we've seen him in the past, I thought he was going to be tricking her. Because we've sort of seen that side of him before, whereas Cruella, yes, we know that later on she's, way more evil. But here I was still under the impression that she was the victim. So the fact that they flipped that whole storyline, I was like, whoa, did not see that coming.
Yeah, she played that wide-eyed innocence so well. I was kind of taken aback when it all turned on its head. That, for me, was the biggest shocker of the whole thing.
Yeah, and so she gets his car, which ends up becoming her car, which is the signature. I think it was called a Panther DeVille. I looked it up last night to get the exact model, but it is a DeVille. And she goes and off to get her things and take care of her mother. And the author heads back to the hotel where he wants to show off a different quill. And he's waiting for Cruella's mom. Cruella's mom shows up and she's like, listen, you better get out of this while you still can, because those dead husbands, they're not a coincidence. Cruella was killing them with the flowers in our garden. And at this point, I still did not believe the mother. Did any of you?
Yeah, guys? I was not 100% on board with her at that point either. Like, I was wondering, you know, is she, it really made you question who was manipulating you, because clearly it was one of them, and it was, which one was it? And it was interesting. Like, by the end, I was starting to feel like it was Cruella, because we hadn't come up with an explanation of how Cruella turned into Cruella yet. So that's when I started leaning that it had to be her, but I was fooled pretty long in thinking that it was the mother with the problem.
Yeah, I agree. I was definitely, even up until the point where Cruella is standing at the opposite end of the hallway from her, I was like, I still think the mother's lying. Like, I'm not entirely sure, but really she was just using the Dalmatians as self-protection against her daughter, who had no trouble now using the power that the author wrote on a little notepad for her to control the dogs to do her bidding for her. And they did her bidding by killing the mother, not banishing her from the house and keeping a safeguard. They murdered her.
Yeah, that was kind of graphic. And I want to talk about that later on with like Emma's storyline. Okay. But I was pretty surprised by the violence there.
Yeah, and it gets a little worse because later on the author comes back to get his quill, which Corella stole. And he finds her making a jacket and she's sort of in this crazed state. And she's like, oh, the dogs have joined mother. So she then killed the dogs and skinned them for an ABC 8 p.m. family show.
Yes, seriously.
I'm please, like, kids, come watch. Pushed,
like, yes, they pushed Kung Fu Panda gone bad. To 9 last, right. on ABC Family. So, I mean, but this is showing at 8. And so, yeah, she has the quill and the author lunges for it and he writes on a piece of paper, which we'll get to in a little bit, another part of the story that sort of ends her reign of terror in this realm, or at least puts a damper on it. And he kind of disappears at this point, but the ink spills on Corella and changes her into the black and white villain that we've seen the whole series so far. Which, so what do you think the ink actually did?
Is it poison or is it like, did it make her crazier than crazy? I was very confused.
Not sure.
Other than giving her the world's most awful penciled eyebrows this episode, which, I mean, I know I'm always on about that, but, and I know hers are very stylized and everything, but I was morbidly distracted by Cruella's eyebrows this episode. I was like, these are much fuller, I felt, than usual. I was like, whoa. Yeah, little much for me tonight.
Yeah, this was actually like my main question out of the episode was, what does that ink spilling on Cruella mean? Because it couldn't have just been for the makeover. I mean, yeah, that's kind of a cool side effect and it gives her that very classic Cruella de Vil look. But I feel like that magic ink is now on her, possibly inside her. I feel like it's gotta come back later. Don't you? I mean,
yeah.
And was it squid ink?
I don't think so.
Okay.
The only reason why is because the squid ink was poison. And this ink, like, has some sort of – it removes magic. Like, I mean, I'm sorry. The squid ink removes – like, it's poisonous to prevent you from using magic for a little bit. Like, when they used it on Pan, it kind of, like, paralyzed him. And this ink, what my thinking was, is that – when Rumple says he has a way to get the ink back, he was letting on more than he knew. So now that Cruella's dead, he might be able to drain her of the ink. Because I'm assuming that after this whole ink was spilled, like, the author couldn't write anymore like that. But then we see him writing later on. So he has to know where else he can get ink. But right now in Storybrooke, the only place that there is ink is in Cruella, which could be highly disturbing again next week. That's just my theory. Anything else on the past, Cruella? Or do we want to start moving into equally horrible present Cruella?
Yeah, let's do that. I have a lot to say.
All right, so in the present Hookless storybook.
and just for note, Robin is missing too. Just for equal opportunity.
But he had 44 minutes to himself. And Hook has had 3 lines in 5 weeks. So,
lodging a formal complaint.
Lodging a formal complaint.
Yeah.
In Magical Ink, it is noted.
Yeah.
So anyway, Regina, speaking of Robin, we're going to start off there anyway. Regina last week was faced with a choice whether she could help Emma and keep the savior pure, or she could go off to New York City and save Robin from Zelina, who is now back. And it seems that in this episode, she chose Robin from the start because she's going to go off and save him. But it quickly turns around. But what did you guys think of the starting from this episode? Because when it ended last week, it seemed pretty obvious that she was going to choose Emma. And then for it to kick off with her going to save Robin, were you surprised by that at all?
I was not surprised that she would go after Robin. I mean, but I get why she – I think it's a big credit to Regina's story arc that she decides not to immediately go through with that and concentrate on what are the more important issues in Storybrooke.
Yeah, I think I was shocked personally because it seemed very defined at the end of last week. Like, yes, she's going to choose Emma, she's going to help her. But at the beginning of this week, she's like, you know what, Emma, you got this whole author thing under control. I can help. I'm just going to go get Robin back. But then we realize that Rumple, who is now keeping the author inside of his cabin in the woods, sort of has a different plan for him. He just needs to keep him safe for now because the whole town is after him. And he's called away. And this is where we find out that Regina does in fact have a plan to save both Emma and Robin at the same time. And this is through using Belle to come and lure Rumple away. And this is the first time that Rumple is actually going to speak to her when she's awake, because the only time that he's seen her before this was when Maleficent cast the sleeping spell all over Storybrooke. So I was surprised he actually like went right away when he was called, because she doesn't have the dagger or anything. It's not like she was commanding him to come and see her.
I think that just shows his desperation, mm-hmm. honestly, and how much he still loves her and misses her.
Yeah, and I thought this was a great moment where they showed him ripping out his heart, and you saw how black it was. Like, yeah. You've never seen a heart that black before, until Regina's just about to crush it, I feel like.
Now, I have a question mm-hmm. about, speaking of hearts. Okay, do you guys think that Belle gave her heart willingly to Regina, if Regina just pulled it out anyway, or if that was even Belle's heart and they were just making up the whole thing?
I think Belle gave her heart. Like, she allowed Regina to do it.
I agree. I think she did too. Because I think Belle, she's over it. Like, she's been betrayed too many times. Hopefully, she's been betrayed too many times.
And even if maybe she didn't know exactly what Regina had in mind, but she is... You know, Belle wants to help, and she never really knows how to help, so she just waits in that shop for someone to show up to tell her what she can do. And so,
which is Regina so sad.
Sad. And Regina shows up and says, I need your help. You know, like, she shows up and she says, how can I help? And Regina says, I'm glad you asked. Like, that right there, I think she's so desperate to help and be a part of everything that she was willing to give her heart to Regina for this, whether or not she would have done what Regina did to Gold, I still think she would have given her heart to Regina to use. Like, she might not have been so mean about it, because let's face it, it was kind of cruel, but it's still, she still would have been up for it, because she just wants to help.
Yeah, I totally agree. I do think that Belle gave that up willingly, but that's a lot of trust to put in Regina. I mean, Regina could kill her right then and there. And thankfully, I think Belle realizes, you know, Regina's trying to turn her life around and all this other stuff. And she does really want to help. But I mean, way to go, Belle, for trusting Regina, who has been in some dark places just like Rumple has.
Yeah, and I would take her offer with a grain of salt, especially if Regina were to tell me, like, oh, don't worry, when you wake up, you won't remember a thing.
Right.
Just be like, what are you going to make me do? Like, besides kissing Rumple, but then, like, watching, looking at his heart. Because I feel like if Belle were in that situation, she would have crumbled the way that Regina had her crumble, but then only to, like, reverse it right at the end, which would have been bad for everyone involved. So Regina reveals that she will crush Belle's heart if Emma is caught in the line of fire and used in Rumple's plan to get to the author. And he sort of backs off and he returns to the cabin. But before he gets there, Cruella pops in to pay the author a visit. And they start to, like, not really reminisce. And the author clearly has the upper hand in this situation, but we still don't know why exactly he has the upper hand. And Cruella she comes in like a ball of fire, and suddenly he's just like, hey, you can't do anything. And I was very confused at this point. I was like, what is going on? Like, I thought in this moment that she was in love with him and he betrayed her. So I think they were doing a really good job at throwing us in the wrong direction the whole episode. Did you guys get that sense?
Definitely.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, good. I just wanted, like, they were throwing us everything possible to distract us from what was actually going on, and I thought that this episode was constructed so well in that regard, because we haven't had that in a while. Everything's been pretty straightforward. Like, you know what's coming next, you know what's coming next. And I felt that way this entire episode until the last 15 minutes, which was really good. But Rumple comes back, and he walks in, and he's like, "What's up, man? I thought we had a deal. Like, you told me you didn't know her. You were like acting like you didn't know her, but I had this like magic ball in my pocket and I was watching you the whole time," which is kind of creepy. I don't like that Rumple's just walking around with that thing, like, and looking in on people. And plus, if he has that, why can't he look in on everything else that's going on? Or does it only work in the cabin? I hate when they throw these things in and I get 15 more questions than I get answers from anything.
Yeah, especially, and just to kind of do a commercial here really mm-hmm. quick, when he was like, I don't know, I guess hearing Belle's voice when she was calling to him, I was like, what is going on? Is he getting like a cell phone call in his head right now? I was like, is Cruella just calling him up? And he's like, hang on, I have to go deal with her really quick, BRB. And I was like,
what? Yeah, exactly.
So luckily it was kind of explained through, I don't know, the well or whatever, but I just thought that was kind of hilarious.
Does he have like a direct line to the well? Like, is he wired to the well?
I guess so.
There's a lot of like little things that we could nitpick, but my main thing was him pulling an orb out of his pocket and being like, haha, gotcha.
Yeah.
You're on candid seriously. Camera.
Also not a euphemism.
Yes. But he will not be pulling anything else out of his pockets this episode. So, but the author will. He has this little page, little note with a dog stamped on it that he hands to Rumple in exchange for deceiving him so he doesn't die a brutal, brutal death after Rumple gets what he wants. And this, we learn, is where the tides kind of change back into Rumple's favor after Regina kind of pushed him to the side. Still don't know what it is, of course. But Rumple's heart. Question. He said that he will not die if it turns completely black, but he will lose all ability to love.
Like, did not that happen already? That was my sort of question. Like, hasn't Rumple, you know, toss that like completely out the window anyway? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I was a little confused with that.
He's been using magic to keep himself from dying. So he's been using magic to keep that little glimmer alive. Right. And I'm wondering if that magic kind of depends on whether or not he's receiving love from someone. So if Belle's love is like gone, he really has no hope anyway.
Then that's it and it's over.
Then that's it. Yeah. But I was confused as to, I thought he would die, like actually die, but instead it's kind of just like status quo almost.
Right. What's so weird though is that he seems to care. Like, yeah. I don't understand. I guess I just don't understand at this point what is Rumple going on for, like, at this point? Like, I just don't understand at all what motivates him. Like, does he want to be back with Belle? Does he, like, I don't get what he wants. I feel like in other seasons, I knew what Rumple wanted. I don't really know that I understand what Rumple wants at this point.
Even when Belle shows up and she's like, well, do you want to be back with me? And he's like, it's more complicated than that. And I'm like, but I understand that the heart thing is more, it makes it more complicated. But at the same time, that should just be your automatic yes answer if you do love her. And then give the but. Like, it's not like you say no first. You say yes, but these are the things I have to do to accomplish that.
Or even like he was starting to forge a relationship with Henry. Like, I just don't understand where all that went. You know, it's just, it's very strange.
Well, I just want to say, like, I think Rumple does want Belle. He still loves Belle, but he loves his power just as much, maybe more, you know, that's debatable. So I think that he does care if he loses that little bit of what he has left in his heart that's shining, because he doesn't want to turn into, I don't know, can you imagine Rumpel without the ability to love. I mean, he's dangerous now. Think of what he would be like that. I think that he doesn't want that to happen. He wants everything. And the thing is, he can't have everything. I mean, they proved that earlier in the season when Belle sent him away, because he was looking for the power and for Belle's love, and she said no. And I think he's just trying to find a way back to that. I don't know if he ever will, but I think that's his motivation, and I think that's him caring about, you know, losing that part of his heart.
This also made me kind of wonder exactly what Rumpel would have the author write as his happy ending if he were to get the author in his pocket. Like,
right.
I'm sure his happy ending would include a future with Belle. I really do.
Right.
But it would also include him being all powerful. It would also include, you know, him not having a weak heart. It would also include, you know, it made me start to wonder what exactly he would be asking for.
Well, and I also feel like there are limitations on what the author can provide, because I feel like one of the things that Rumpel, sort of the no-brainer to request, would be to bring Bay back. And I just, I feel like despite the author being very powerful, there are certain things that not even he can change. And I feel like him changing life and death is not like within the power of what he has. Like, once you're dead, you're dead. That's it.
It's like the genie.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of, pretty much. Like, you, like it's, although it does seem like the author could force somebody to fall in love. Like, that does seem like that could be a legit power. So I don't know, maybe not exactly like the genie.
Yeah. But he's got rules. Everything has rules. Right. Even the genie has rules. So
I think that the with the rule thing, if he wanted everyone to bow down to him, I think there's a limitation as to how much power the author can give him versus taking agency away from anyone else. So if he were to give Rumpel like unlimited power, he would basically be stripped. He would change everyone else's stories. He'd be stripping them away of anything that they had going for them, because it would, I think it would cause a whole, like, hole in the space-time continuum.
There we go. Let's throw Doctor Who right into the
As if everything's not wibbly-wobbly timey-wimey already.
Listen, oh, Doctor Who would take one look at this timeline and be like, I'm out.
And I'm done.
Done.
And I'm
no,
done.
No, the doctor would be like, I don't have patience for this. Where is my Sonic?
Also, I know nothing about Doctor Who, but I do know that he would look at this and just
still
slowly back away. Okay, so let's get to Emma and her pouting. While I agree with what everyone was saying in the quotes section of this episode earlier, this has only been probably, in timeline-wise, maybe a grand total of 12 hours since she found out what's going on. Like, the days haven't changed that much. And so I think she's kind of like in the right for still kind of pouting, but we're seeing it very, very dramatized in short bursts, which can get annoying. But do you think that Mary Margaret and David should be doing something else besides trying to say they're sorry? Like, is there anything else that they could possibly be doing right now? Not in a bad way, I'm just curious.
Right. I mean, other than trying to, you know, fix it, and I don't know how they really could, I'm going to say no, there's really not. I mean, they did what they could do, which is saying we got it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's really anything else they could do. But I still have a really hard time with them believing that somebody be so predestined to be either evil or good. I mean, I think, you know, it takes away, as you said, the word agency and choices. And I have a lot of problems with this being that you are the person who is solely evil or solely good. I think you're the sum of your choices.
Which is what Once Upon a Time has been preaching literally from episode one, is that you're not born evil.
Yeah, I totally agree with the whole, like, Mary Margaret and David probably can't do anything to convince Emma, but standing there and like berating her about it and like trying to almost force her to forgive you is not the way to do it. Like, I agree they should be off doing something else, looking for the author, maybe. I don't know. Like, yeah, just,
or even like shouldn't... trying to find Maleficent. I understand right. that like, that's probably not your best option right now because she is a very, very powerful and she is very upset with you. But at the same time, like, there.
It's not going to help to stand there over Emma's head and just keep
right.
asking her. If she's over it, like,
and then just, having right. like,
or here's a concept. How about like guard duty for Henry? Like, has it, did it not surprise anybody else that nobody else before this has thought of, oh, let's go take the Henry kid hostage. Like, to me, it's such the obvious, you know, kind of ploy that, you know, hey, how about having the grandparents be in charge of, you know, keeping Henry safe? That might be a good idea.
Yeah, and they kind of like, I mean, they have their head about them. They knew to go to the cabin at the end of this episode. Like, they are useful, but I was getting annoyed with having these scenes in the loft, like, constantly coming back and having just them hearing the same conversations over and over again, because I think it's wasting time. We have a lot more to get through. We understand how upset Emma is, but we don't need three of the same scenes in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But this first scene where they're in the loft did allow Regina to come in and be like, hey, gotta go to New York. Zelina's back. I'll explain later. And then Emma kind of goes to meet up with her before she goes off to New York and gives her a gun.
Right.
Can
Which
you imagine?
That was interesting, too. Regina's back in heat. I mean, that like, was just like, oh my gosh.
It's like giving an alcoholic
really?
Champagne. It's like, what yes. are you doing?
I mean, besides that, like, there's laws against that. Like,
yeah.
does she have a concealed carry license? Like,
yeah, exactly,
I doubt
right.
it.
I mean, Robin was able to break and enter and jump out a window. So I feel like she's got some tricks up her sleeve.
Yeah.
In
Maybe.
The real world.
Yeah, sure.
But she shouldn't put it, like, in her purse, I think.
Yes, in the holster, in the purse, in the big, like, in the designer handbag. It was very, it was strange. Yes. Very strange.
But then we get this video message and it's from Henry and he's like, guys, Cruella, you know, she trained Pongo and he's got me and I'm hanging out with her. And then she like takes the phone and she's like, hey, got your kid. And I loved this whole thing because this was one of the scenes that was released early this week and I watched it a couple of times because I just love her coming into frame and kind of holding Henry and Henry's pained reactions to be like cuddled up against Cruella and then her like trying to shut it off at the end, like her hand coming up to push the stop button. I loved every single minute of it.
There is nothing like watching these people like fish out of water with technology because some of my favorite moments with Hook are the one with the cell phone where he's like, I don't know, I press a button and Emma's there. Like, like it's I do love that stuff because it's true. Like they're from the Enchanted Forest. They wouldn't necessarily know how everything works. I mean, Cruella's got a better idea because she's originally from our time, but she hasn't been in this time, you know, so she doesn't exactly know everything. So, yeah, no, I love these
moments. Luckily, like. Luckily, Emma knew what was going on because she at least lived in a world with video messaging and Regina's still kicking it on a BlackBerry. So I don't know how good the image quality was on that thing with this video message. But anyway, they got Henry and that kind of convinces or forces Regina to stay a little longer and put off her plan to go get Robin because she has to save her son, which I guess makes sense. Whatever. And
it does make sure you know Henry's still more important to her than Robin. Like,
yes.
No matter how much they talk about Robin and she, you know, feels so inclined to go save him, Henry still ranks higher.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Because I feel like she could have a happy, or like her happy ending wouldn't just be Robin. It has to be Robin and yeah. Henry.
No, it was a cute side-by-side shot. It was like seething mother number one and seething mother number two.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I love. Like when they're mama bears together, I think that works so well. And I'm glad there's not that tension between them like there has been in the past. They're sort of past that, and now they just work together trying to get Henry back all the time and protecting him and stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, and so they go on this rescue mission, and we get, like, Hook's only four lines in this whole episode saying, I've run a rescue mission before. And Emma's like, yeah, well, obviously I'm taking you. So she takes him and Regina because she needs to be with people that she trusts. And I think that that was the, like, again, we've heard it before, but that was like the final blow, and that kind of kicked Mary Margaret and David into high gear to go and do something on their own. And it also set off this great scene in the forest between Emma, Regina, and Hook, who was like trailing behind.
With the leftover Ursula seashells. I was like,
yeah, and the leftover conch shells. But I think that whole scene was fantastic, where you have Emma being told to like suck it up and have a stiff upper lip, but then you have Emma coming back and throwing that Regina's tantrum for 30 odd years back at her. And then you have Emma's great, great line where she says that like they recognize and they never pretended to be anything that they weren't. So Regina and Hook were admittedly villains, and they own it, and they know that what they did wrong. They lay out everything they did wrong on the table. Hook takes a little while to get his bad stuff off of his chest, but he's willing to admit that he's done wrong, whereas her parents are constantly telling everyone around them the best, we're the epitome of good, they own the title. And for that was the first time where I kind of like flipped and was on Emma's side. What did you guys think of that whole part?
It was, again, I just had such a problem with the whole concept of that she couldn't forgive them for a bad judgment when they were panicked like 30 years ago. Again, it is the 12-hour time frame, but it's just like, I mean, how many bad decisions did Emma make? Like, you know, to me, I really liked Regina telling her like to get her head out of her ass. The person who I really want her to tell her that is like Henry. I want Henry to be like, Mom, you're a moron, and tell her to knock it off. And then the whole, you know, I mean, we're going to get there eventually. And then Emma's one act is now going to turn her dark. I was like, are you kidding me? So I had a lot of sort of problems with this whole like back end of the episode.
I know that the thing at the end is sort of like the climax of this whole, like, her going dark, and maybe that'll be like the turning point for her. But I don't know if you guys noticed, but her eye makeup this episode, like, it kept getting darker and darker and more red. And I feel like she had these like bags under her eyes or something. And if the time frame is as short as you were saying it was, Brittany, obviously it's not because she hasn't been sleeping well for the last week or so. And I don't know, maybe that is the case. But after finding out what her parents said, I kind of wonder if this whole Heart of Darkness thing has been like creeping up on her since then, and that it's actually starting to show. And it's not just what happened with Henry that really pushed her over the edge, but it's been kind of creeping up more and more throughout this entire episode. Because, like, her eyes to me, like, they were so dark, and it really caught me at the end.
No, I completely agree with you, because I feel like, yes, her, you know, killing Cruella, huge deal, whatever, we'll get there. But the having the inciting incident toward her becoming dark being that her parents lied to her, and they lied to her about killing someone else's child many years ago, I feel like that is almost a bigger deal than her protecting her kid from Cruella, who's trying to kill him. Like, that, to me, the bigger inciting incident would be her parents, who are supposed to be the most good of good. Like, they are supposed to be the pinnacle of good. Even they have really dark deeds in their past. Like, that, to me, is going to trigger more change than the other.
Yeah, and I'm still, like, while I see where Emma's coming from more so after this scene, I also think that she's sort of speaking to both sides. She's saying, yes, Regina, you can change and you can make a difference, but she's negating everything her parents have done since this act by saying, well, they lied to me this one time, so it cancels out everything. So if Regina were to slip up, or Hook were to slip up and have a bad deed, would she feel the same way against them? Would she be like, well, you messed up, or you're completely evil now, and I can't trust you ever again? I feel like she'd be easier to forgive them than she is her own parents right now. But,
well, and it might have something to do with the fact that, I mean, from what Emma knows, Regina was evil. Hook was evil, and they turned good. So knowing that someone who's supposedly good can do evil, I think that's what's doing more damage to her. Like, it's easier to forgive Regina or Hook a misstep because they've have serious missteps in their past that before she knew them, you know, they were born that way or they were created that way. Like, you know what I mean? Whereas Snow and David misstepping for her is a much bigger deal because they are, you know, everything she thinks of when she thinks of good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I'm as you're talking, I'm going through, like, you know, my Once Upon a Time catalog in my head of, like, Killian being, like, an honorable sailor and then having one turn, and that was his moment. And then you have Regina having her one turn, and then you have, like, Snow, who did all these, like, they were petty crimes. They were never, like, malicious or, you know, like, she was stealing things and whatever, but she was never like killing anyone or trampling villages. And then she got married to David and they became good. They were what was held up as the highest regard of good people. And then they have their one turn. So Emma's one turn coming up in this episode is like just another chapter in her book. Like there's so much more to go with Emma. She's just finally catching up to like these other moments that the rest of the cast has had, I guess we could say, if that makes any sense at all, because she...
No, it does. I was just, as you're saying it, I'm like, yeah, that really does make a lot of sense. Like, there is kind of one big, like, inciting incident, you know, for all of the villains and for, even for good, there's something like the wedding, like them, you know, starting a life, all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, but I'm not sure that this is, that Cruella's death is Emma's moment per se. I think it's a huge part, but I think it's a combination of things because you have Hook who has been constantly like kind of reminding her, like, you know, he had one line 3 weeks ago that was like, oh, and remember Rumpel's plan is to turn you dark. I think he added a love at the end there just to remind us that they're in a relationship. And then that was it. Like, so he's been sort of like, remember, like, this is going to happen. And they've been trying to, like, they're not hammering that point home to her yet until now. Like, she's realizing, I don't think she's realizing it even herself. But I did see what you were talking about, Karen. And I only thought that that was her eyes being so red was because she was trying to keep that pose for so long and so many takes in the episode.
Yeah, that are a really bad allergy attack. Yeah, definitely noticed it had sort of that bruised, almost Twilight-esque vampire look about it.
Yeah, they were like, don't blink, don't blink, don't blink. And she's like, I have to blink. But yeah, I did not notice that her eyes were getting darker as the episode went on. I did notice her hair was a hot mess in the humid forest, and Regina's was perfect under her umbrella. But I think that's just to show her falling apart a little bit more so and not caring.
Definitely.
Which is a good... good costuming, if that's what they intended. If not, you kind of drop the ball with keeping Emma's hair nice for one scene. So what do we have left? We'll get to the huge Emma Cruella versus the cliff in 1 second. But Maleficent was in this episode a while ago, and she runs into Cruella on the street, and Cruella sort of pulls over, and she is visibly terrified of Maleficent. And she kind of like eggs her on talking about Lily, and Maleficent just wants answers. What did you do to my daughter? And Cruella's point blank, well, I left her to die in the woods. And then as Maleficent's getting angry, she's like, but there's more to it than that. And there's a couple of things that you need to know. But then Maleficent really doesn't want to hear it and turns into a dragon, which is exactly what Cruella wants, because it was written by the author that she can control and any animal. So I'm assuming dragons count because she puts Maleficent to sleep. So Maleficent's,
and now there's
just
a giant dragon hanging out in the story.
Just sleeping in the middle of the road.
Just taking
in the middle of the road.
Yeah. Taking a snooze. That's it. Yeah.
So I have a feeling we're going, and we definitely will, because next week's episode is entitled Lily. We're going to get a bunch more answers in regards to that. But I think that was just a reminder that Cruella had the answers and she kind of took them with her over the cliff. So we're left with Emma and Cruella in a standoff. Now Cruella has a gun aimed at Henry and she's not afraid to use it, but we kind of get this split story going where Mary Margaret and David show up at the cabin where the author is, and the author's beginning to realize what he's done unintentionally. Did you guys see, like, feel that it was unintentional, or am I making that up?
No, I totally felt like it was unintentional. Like, he very sadly got screwed. He decided to do something positive for himself, and it had very unintended consequences.
Uh-huh.
And then he ends up, you know, trapped in the book, and then he gets out of the book, and there's that moment of, who do you trust? It's kind of like the genie being let out of the bottle. You don't know how or why you got let out of the bottle. Just, you know, make a break for it.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's more, I don't know that he's totally altruistic, but I feel like he has more of an opportunity for being good than other people did.
Yeah, and I think what he does in the scene where he's with Rumpel and he passes him that slip of paper, he's not entirely sure what Rumpel's going to do with that. He just knows that he could buy himself into Rumpel's good graces for just a minute. And then as Mary Margaret and David come in demanding to know what's going on, you realize that what the author gave to Rumpel was a slip of paper that he wrote when Cruella was about to kill him in her attic all those years ago, saying that Cruella de Vil can never kill another person. So by giving that to Rumpel, he planted this little seed that he's just seeing coming together. Rumpel knows that Cruella can't kill Henry. She knows that Emma doesn't know that, but Emma thinks that she knows Cruella's not messing around. So she thinks that she's going to kill him. And so she uses her magic against him, and Rumpel watches from a distance as everything falls into place and he didn't have to do anything, which I thought was another great twist. Except for the fact that Cruella is now dead.
Yeah, that part took me by surprise. And I mean, I'm not adverse to, like, violent things. I like violent things, but I don't necessarily expect them on Once Upon a Time. And between the fact that Cruella had dogs eat her mother,
right,
and then she was pointing a gun at Henry, who's like, what, 12 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And then she's thrown from the cliff and you see her broken body down below. I was really shocked by how dark they're getting, and it makes me a little worried about what next week is going to be like, because the tone doesn't – I mean, even when Regina and Rumpel were at their worst, I feel like there was always this sense of whimsy to them. And they were always a little over the top, whereas Emma going dark actually frightens me, because she's more human than the other ones, I feel like, and it makes it more realistic, and I guess I don't really expect that from the show.
Well, the thing is, too, I don't think we've ever actually, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm having a really hard time thinking of when have we ever seen them kill somebody? And I don't mean, like, turn to stone or, you know, disappear off screen, like actively somebody other than, I guess, Bay. And when's the last time we actually saw somebody die?
Yeah, because I mean, and he was killed, but it wasn't so much that he was like,
right, it was more like slowly dying by sickness than anything else.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It wasn't a malicious act. Like, the closest we got was the knife being thrown at him, but
right,
he survived that.
I mean, I guess when there's, you know, like when we're back in the Enchanted Forest, you know, and there were random battles with knights, it's like, okay, the third knight from the left just bought it, but we don't have an emotional connection to that person, mm-hmm, so I don't think it's that powerful for us. But I felt like this is the first person that we knew and had a name and had more than one episode that actually died, wasn't turned into a wooden boy or stone or anything like that. So I felt like there was that. But the other side for me is I'm looking at it, that scene, and I'm looking at it like almost as a parent and going, there's a person with a gun that for all I know is completely loaded and she is going to blow my son's head off. You know what? I'm not having a problem condemning Emma. I mean, she didn't know that the gun, you know, there was no way Cruella could kill or harm Henry. She didn't know that. But regardless of not having that information, I mean, I would say there was absolutely a considered level of threat. I to me, it was almost like a self-defense kind of thing. It was more of like Henry's defense, but I felt like she really truly believed that Henry was in imminent danger and you had to kind of quote unquote take the shot, and she did it. So I had like a real hard time with all this because I just felt like Emma's actions, given the situation, it was like justifiable homicide, which feels so weird just even saying that in regards to Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, but at the same time, I feel like she could have done something else. Like, she could have knocked the gun out of her hand, but she chose to take her light magic, by the way, and use it to kill somebody. And I feel like that's why I was talking about the makeup and her mind kind of going dark before something seriously tragic happened. I think that it's been building up the last few episodes, and she very pointedly decided to throw Cruella from the cliff instead of maybe doing something that would save Henry and yet not, you know, murder another human being.
Yeah, I thought that this was, we've been building up all season to Emma turning to dark. I just didn't think it would come with her taking that step. But that's what it is. That's where we are. Do we have any other thoughts on Cruella or Ursula coming back? We have a lot. I feel like we have so much to get through, but not too many episodes left. All right. Well, if that's all that we have to talk about this week, next week, I won't be here, but hopefully everyone else will be on and you guys could be talking about Lily and finding out what's been up with Lily, what she's been up to since we last saw her with Emma, and how the two get along in the present of Storybrooke. So it should be pretty good. And so that's about it. So until next time, I'm Brittany.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Laura.
Bye.